Hey now, welcome back to the Deadology Podcast from Pencil Hill Studio, New Paltz, New York. I'm your host, Howard Weiner. This is Season 4, Episode Number 1. Today is January 17th, 2026, and we begin this podcast, obviously, with a somber note, the passing of Bob Weir. Today they're having the memorial, a public memorial in San Francisco. I'm sure there's going to be a huge turnout for that. And really sad, sad week, man. And what a little period this has. We lost so many greats. It's kind of started, I think, with Bill Walton, 2024, and then Phil Lesh. And just a couple of months ago, Donna Jean Godchow. And last Saturday night, January 10th, I got the bad news. I was driving, and on a text chat, I heard of Bobby's passing. Somebody texted RIP Bobby, and I was like, that can't be, man. No one expected that. I was hoping it was some kind of false thing that he saw on the internet. So I immediately switched to the Grateful Dead channel on Sirius, and unfortunately, I heard the somber, hushed tones that I expected to hear. The guy who usually announces that a legend had just passed, whether it's a Grateful Dead or David Crosby, or you know, just that those hushed tones acknowledging the death of a rock legend. And man, Bob Weir, 78, he was a rock legend, an American icon. You know, just an improbable story too. He was born October 16th, 1947, and he was at passing by Dana's music shop, and he heard Jerry Garcia playing banjo, and the great thing about Bobby, fearless and going after it, his curiosity, he had to go in and hear the banjo player. And somehow he connected with Jerry and you know, played with Jerry that day. And there was some, you know, he wasn't a musical match for Jerry at that time, but there was something about him. He must have charmed Jerry, and, you know, they formed a band. And about 2 years later, the Warlocks changed their name to the Grateful Dead. When that happened, Bob Weir was just 18 years old. The youngest member of the Grateful Dead. Obviously the least talented because all these guys were older and had more experience. But hey, man, he took the opportunity and just improved like so much every year. By the years 72 through 74, he was playing some of the most innovative rhythm guitar anybody has ever heard to this day. And it all came from experience. He didn't go to the Juilliard School for training. It was just all experience playing with Jerry and the Grateful Dead. And there's just something about this guy, just seeing an opportunity and pouncing on it. And he did it. You know, he was, he definitely was amazing, man. Just to be able to go in, kind of be the underdog, the youngest guy, and not, you know, have total confidence to, you know, make it work out. And for the musical tribute, I was thinking of what I was going to play or talk about for this episode. There's just so much. I mean, Weir's created so much music over the years and so many songs. I figured the easiest thing to do is to focus on one show. So I picked out one of his birthday shows, October 16th, 1981, Amsterdam. I always wanted to talk about the show, and it's a Bobby-centric show. I think it best exemplifies Weir's courage and curiosity and tenacity. At the point of that show, he was 34 years old, and he already probably lived the life of 100 years at that point, man. Just being with the Grateful Dead for 16 years, a veteran at age 34, a musical master at the age of 34. So that'll be the show where we're taking a look at. And before we jump into that, just a few more things on Bob Weir. You know, he was just irreplaceable. As far as the Grateful Dead go, I think him and Jerry were like two guys that just couldn't be replaced. There was nobody like them. If anything had happened to Bob back in the day. Funny, quick-witted. I love interviews with Weir and when he would talk to the crowd. He always had just like such a great sense of humor, great wit, and usually there was a lot of wisdom in what he was saying, but he always kind of just played the role of not being a wise man, but he actually was very wise. The best was like when he used to tell jokes. It didn't matter if they were funny. It was just his delivery that made them work. And it's been cool. I've been watching a lot of interviews that I've never seen with Bob Weir, especially in the recent older days, I guess you would call him. Just he went from being almost like a underrated clown to being an American musical master when you see what he did later in his career, and just being interviewed by all the leading newsmen, and just with what the guy has learned and shared and inspired is just unbelievable. What a life he lived. So this is really a celebration. Even talking about his risk taking, in 1979, he started playing some slide guitar at live shows. And for me, to my ears, it was a very rocky start. He didn't sound good at all. In fact, when he was playing Sugar Ree, he would often clash with Jerry, and it seemed to almost affect the music. I still cringe when I hear that. That's not going to stop Bob Weir. I mean, he just kept getting better and better, developed his own unique style. By the time he was doing, the Red Roosters and Minglewood and CC Rider, where he would take that slide guitar break, I think that stuff is fabulous, even though he does get criticized for it. I think it's amazing because it's so unique sounding. No one's ever done anything like that, and really, unless they're imitating Weir, no one's done anything like it again. The beauty of his slide guitar in those songs was he was rolling out the red carpet for Jerry Garcia. They were perfect setups for Garcia to just to go off and shred. So it served a bigger purpose, instead of like, being a more technically correct slide guitar, which would kind of be almost boring and overdone. He had these screeching sounds, which nobody had ever done before in slide guitar, in a major band. And he just stuck to it. That was Bob Weir's way, distinctive. And man, did it work on those songs, because Jerry would go off. It was like, he was like the croupier getting the bull ready to charge, was so he was a lot more intelligent, a lot more musically savvy than he ever gave off, because he always kind of like playing the clown a little bit. And he was always, I think he was always very underrated during his days, but that kind of changed after the Grateful Dead. And he started doing all the new bands after the Grateful Dead, the Rat Dogs, and all the participation with Further. And I think they were called Dead, not Dead and Company, but there was another incarnation of the Weir and Lesh doing some stuff together. And I think it's fantastic for legacy that they broke apart. Phil did his vision, Phil and Friends. Weir went to Dead and Company, because it was more legacy out there for more for the fans to grab onto and keep this keep the momentum of the whole Grateful Dead experience rolling. It was really extraordinary, and I love what Weir created with John Mayer. To me, that's something special. I mean, I would only go see Dead and Company once or twice a year. It was nothing that I had to, after the show, listen to the tape or anything. But just what it did for legacy is incredible. And just Weir at this point as a master, being at this point in his career. Also got to mention Wolf Brothers. That stuff was pretty cool too. All the people that looked to play with Weir. He went from, being the underestimated prophet of the Grateful Dead to musical master. Pretty incredible. But that TV appearance, I just saw it the other day with John Mayer, and they're playing Althea. I mean, you got to give Weir all the credit in the world. He realized, hey, this guy John Mayer, he ain't joking, man. This guy's a great player. He's totally into Garcia and the Grateful Dead. They worked something out. Dead and Company went out there, and it was just unbelievable how well they did, and how they brought the music to a new generation. And what a respect I have for John Mayer. He just took this project and ran with it. There's a lot of things John Mayer could do for money. He didn't have to do that. But it was something that he had to do it because he loves the music that much, and it was just so cool Weir was able to pass this on to John Mayer and get all those new fans, a new generation of music into the Grateful Dead. And man, it's just Weir so much, man. Just I'm taking in all these interviews on YouTube, and man, he's really gonna be missed. But he did so much that it's really at this point just a celebration. So let's jump into today's featured show from Amsterdam. So these concerts in Amsterdam and are known as the Oops concerts. They weren't scheduled when the tour started. They also played in the Melkweg in Amsterdam on the 15th, and the show we're going to look at is October 16th, the second night. So that this is, by the way, is an excellent tour, very underrated. I love this year, 81 tour. I think I did a podcast on the Barcelona show on October 19th, which was the first time Garcia got to play in Spain. But we're a bunch of shows into the tour. It's kind of near the tail end. And the Grateful Dead were supposed to do two shows in the south of France, but inclement weather led to the cancellation of those two shows. So the Grateful Dead, decided just to rent some equipment, equipment, PA, and they did two concerts at the Melkweg Club in Amsterdam. And just whoever happened to be on tour and was able to make the trip to found out about it and was able to make the trip to Amsterdam was in for a Field of Dreams experience. It was that incredible, and that's surreal, what happened in Amsterdam. So the first night, October 15th, they played two electric sets. Man, it must have been amazing to see, to be there. But if you went to the 15th and you didn't see the 16th, you made the biggest mistake of your life, because the 16th is just one of the most interesting Grateful Dead shows of all time. Surreal is probably the best word to sum it up. The first night was a pretty basic set list, nothing too exciting. As my last listen to it, it was just, pretty average show. But must have been incredible to see him in this small place, which I don't have the figures in front of me. I'm guessing must have been like a 400 or 500 people hash bar in Amsterdam. So night two, it's Bob Weir's birthday, and they're out for the gusto on this night, man. It's just a remarkable show. So it starts off, the audience is aware that it's Bob Weir's birthday, so they sing "Happy Birthday" to Bob, and man, he looks so freaking young. He's 34 at this point. But he was in good shape, and he had the probably the Lacoste shirt on, and he had a collared shirt for sure. There's actually a video of this on YouTube. You can actually, it's amazing that there's a video of this on YouTube. No other show from the tour has a video, but this one does, and it's right on the band. You don't see the crowd, you really don't see the bar, but it's right on the band. Must have been set up on a tripod, and somebody just moving it a little bit, to Garcia then to Weir. But a very cool video, great sound on it. And they open with an acoustic set on October 16th. And this is the last Grateful Dead for the last real Grateful Dead acoustic set. They did, Jerry, Phil, and Bobby, I think, did an acoustic thing in '94, but it wasn't the Grateful Dead. They did one show. And New Year's Eve, 1981, they played acoustics, but it was really a Joan Baez set. So this is the last full set of Grateful Dead acoustic ever, historic. And anybody there, I don't even think they could be thinking in these terms, but this is it, man. This is the last Grateful Dead acoustic set. So it opens up with, fittingly, with "On the Road Again," and the band is really on. Probably the sound is, and obviously there's a good reason for it. The sound is not mixed as good as the Radio City and Warfield shows from the year before. But with rented equipment, and and so what they were doing was remarkable. So very, very fitting to open with "On the Road Again," Direwolf second, Weir classic "Monkey and the Engineer" third. Obviously a cover tune, but one that Weir loved and has been playing throughout the years. I just seen him do "Monkey and the Engineer" last night on it was a Dave Letterman from 4/13/82. You know, him and Garcia were there. They're funny, man. Just these guys were hysterical. They have great TV. Letterman, Garcia, and Weir. And I forget the other, what was the other tune they did? Deep Ellum. They did Deep Ellum and Monkey and the Engineer. Surprised they didn't do Deep Ellum in Amsterdam. But moving on, we get Birdsong in the fourth and Cassidy in the fifth. And that's the hottest point of this acoustic set. Garcia's playing is great on that. Really, truly stunning acoustic playing. Oh, Babe, It Ain't No Lie, sixth. And then we're going to get to our first musical highlight of the night, Bob Weir, The Race Is On, a George Jones classic.
My heart's got a big break. Been a bad alone and a sharp and painful. I ain't never shame. I think that I'm taking heart since you broke me off with a car. The race is on. It's pride of the backstreet. Heartaches and going to the inside. My tune is rolling back. Time not to fall. My heart's out of the running home to a scratch for another sip. The race is on and it looks like heartaches. The winner loses all.
That's one of my favorite Bob Weir covers, The Race Is On. It was written by Don Rollins, and George Jones had a big hit with it in 1964. The Bob Weir version, pretty close to what George Jones did. I love the way Weir plays it, whether it's acoustic or electric, as they did in the earlier days. The Race Is On, and then Ripple, the almighty anthem, acoustic anthem, closes out the acoustic set in Amsterdam. The last time the Grateful Dead would play an entire set of acoustics of Grateful Dead music. So just a special night. Nobody could have imagined that they were going to see acoustics that night, and nobody could have imagined that that would be the last one. So right there, that just that set alone makes this a historic night. And just a little commentary on Weir's, the way he covers tunes. This is a pretty straightforward cover of the George Jones version, which was a hit. I like it a lot, and you know that's usually the way Weir approached his covers, as opposed to Jerry, who would kind of rework it, and he would hear things in it, and he'd expand on it, and you know it would end up not sounding like the original, but he always was very careful to do it justice. While Weir tended to be more true to the original, and which was very cool, especially when he was doing the Dylan tunes, man, when he was doing Stuck Inside of Mobile, and, you know, Stuck Inside of Queen Jane, approximately, those Highway 61 revisited songs that he loved to do, and a few others, Masterpiece. You can see the difference between Weir and Jerry right there on Masterpiece, how Jerry took it in a different, slower direction, and Weir did it more to the point like Dylan. But yeah, it was always the beauty of those guys, man, Bob and Jerry, incredible taste, and that was so important to the Grateful Dead repertoire. Just, you know, Morning Dew and Turn On Your Love Light, and Pigpen pulling that one out. Just the songs they picked, just impeccable musical taste. And it's so important to their success that these songs that they picked out, in addition to all the, you know, all their originals. And a little later on, I'm going to give you my top seven Bob Weir Grateful Dead originals of all time. So we got the first set completed with Ripple. And set two, Jerry says, at the end says, we're going to come back and play a little electric for you. And man, this is, this electric set is heavy, man. It's just like such a great also snapshot of Weir's courage and ability just to go out there and try anything fearless. You know, it's a fearless set and definitely surreal. There's no drums and space in this set. And it begins with Playing in the Band, an awesome choice for a set that's going to get really, really strange and different than any set in the history of the Grateful Dead. And the other thing about the Playing in the Band is it gave the band a chance. They're there with rented equipment. Now they got 12 minutes to go back and forth, have a little musical conversation, make sure their equipment is tuned up exactly as best as it can be. So it was, you know, that was the inspired choice, the perfect, the only choice really to ensure a great set, playing in the band, get all the levels right. Everybody could hear how everybody's equipment sounds, and it's pretty hot. Garcia does some nice licks on it. So I'm thinking, I'm not looking at the stats, but I think it came in at about a 10-12 minute Playing in the Band. And then they break into a one and only version of Holy Gully, a song done by the Olympics. I think it was around 1960 they had a hit with it. Holy Goalie was a big line dance song, and it sparked a whole dance craze. I didn't do too much research on the song, but just had to get a couple facts because, you know, it's a song I really never heard. I never even heard the Olympics version, to be honest with you. Just this Grateful Dead version, very simple, you know, rock, dance, R&B kind of tune. And, you know, the Dead did it this one time. It sounds great. I'm kind of surprised they didn't, you know, bring it back one other time. Nothing that would stay in the rotation. But just, you know, the beginning of this surreal, like, you know, you have to pinch yourself. Like you feel like you're dreaming. If you're in the Amsterdam, there's a couple hundred people there, and you see in the Grateful Dead do this. You know, I remember I was at Madison Square Garden for the 87 when Garcia was doing that Watchtower Morning Dew. And it was so good. Like, I couldn't even believe it was real. You know, that surreal feeling as it was going down. Like, this is incredible. Am I dreaming? So I think if I was in Amsterdam, try to put yourself in the shoes of if you were in that bar in Amsterdam and seeing the Grateful Dead on rented equipment without any pre-announcement, just, you know, on the spur of the moment kind of thing. Just pretty awesome. Good version of Holy Gully. And it's the one and only version, a creative risk-taking by Bob Weir, who does the lead vocals on this. So let's check it out. ¶¶
gully too.
Hey, that's an infectious little tune. I'm sure everybody in Amsterdam was dancing up a storm, although it might not have been line dancing. Yeah, hey, it's talking about a storm, man. I'm looking out my window in New Paltz today. There's been like a little bit of an unexpected snowstorm. Got like at least 3-4 inches out there, which kind of surprised me a bit. Looks great outside my window. And I think it's a good afternoon to learn the Hully Gully. I'm going to pull up some videos later after I'm finished with the podcast. But onward with October 16th, 1981, Bob Weir's 34th birthday celebration in the Milkway Club in Amsterdam. Yeah, when I saw Bob Dylan in Amsterdam, the Milkway wasn't open. I passed by and just, you know, took a look at it. Man, I wish I could have got in. To see what went on inside there, to, you know, just imagine what it must have been like to see the Grateful Dead in that club. Unbelievable. On with the show, as you might be able to tell at the end of Hully Gully, there was a little noodling, and they went right into the wheel. Once again, very cool, because you just not the type of thing you usually see, the wheel, third song of the second set. So, yeah, this is definitely a show of dreams, just catching stuff out of place. That's just the way that they throw the wheel in there to remind you, you are seeing the Grateful Dead tonight. An awesome version. Jerry singing is beautiful on this. There's a lot of picking. It's a little bit of a quicker version, but very infectious. And it was a great wheel. And then they go into Samson. I'm not sure if they ever put these two songs together before. A ripping version of Samson. You know, Jerry has gotten used to his rented equipment here, and he's just, kicking ass and taking names. This wheel Samson is really pretty incredible. I'm not going to play a highlight because we got the highlights are just starting here. Man, this is a phenomenal show, but a great wheel Samson, third and fourth. And then, you know, it's Bobby's birthday, man, and, you know, he really went out on this night, probably did more courageous, unusual things than any other time in his Grateful Dead career. So for the fifth song, we've done Hully Gully. Hey, why don't we play Gloria? We've never played that before. Now, as some of you know, 1979, they did a couple of Gloria jams, but there was no singing. You know, Brent had just joined the band, and late 1979, you get a lot of cool jams before drums. And one of the things they riffed on a little bit was Gloria, but they never sang it. They never, you know, officially played it. If you look at Dead Bass, made a mistake. They credited the first Gloria as January 30th, 1968. But based on other sources and the fact that there's no tape, that it never actually happened. So this is the first version of Gloria, a great tune, and the Dead would pop it out on a few other occasions over the years. I really like the version from Berkeley, November 3rd, 84, I believe. They played it in Richmond in 85. That's probably the most famous version of it. But yeah, fun tune, Weir's into it, Jerry rips on it, so... let's go back to the highlights, man. Another breakout for the Grateful Dead via Bob Weir, Gloria.
Gloria.
There you go, Bob Weir and the Grateful Dead paying homage to Van Morrison and them. GLORIA, Gloria. Yeah, hot little song. Yeah, cool thing that the Grateful Dead did it a few times. And just amazing. We're five songs into this second set. And we got two first ever versions, courtesy of Mr. Bob Weir. And we're going to make it 3 out of 6 here, even though this the next song really isn't a first ever version. It's first ever, I believe it's the first ever Grateful Dead version of a song done by Pigpen. Pigpen last did Turn On Your Love Light, May 24th, 1972. That was in London. And, you know, Pigpen songs were pretty much off limits. You know, they were his songs. And as time goes on, you know, things change. You want to pay homage to Pigpen. And it's such a great song. It was like the Grateful Dead had to bring it back. Turn On Your Love Light. And they would bring back, Jerry would sing Big Boss Man. Although they didn't really do many of Pigpen's songs, this was one. And this is the first time, I mean, on a night like this, what the hell? We've done two first ever versions. Tonight's the night to, you know, let it all hang out, man, after midnight. So they decide to play Turn On Your Love Light. Nice Gloria jam ensues. You can't really tell where they're going. It doesn't even sound like they're going into Turn On Your Love Light. It's kind of, you might hear it a little bit, but if you were at the show, you would have been shocked when Bobby started singing the first verse. After a couple lines, Phil really digs into the bass line and we're fully into Turn On Your Love Light. So after a little bit of a clumsy start, this is a kick-ass Turn On Your Love Light, man. Garcia goes off on it. Turn On Your Love Light, the Grateful Dead would bring it back after this. I think that the next time that I know the next time they played it was in Alpine Valley, 1984. I was at that show. And then Love Light, when Bobby and the band hit it right and everybody was into it, it was magical. But a lot of times it came off as a throwaway tune, so I have mixed feelings about when I was at a show hearing Love Light. Sometimes it was magical, you know, it was unbelievable. But it also had that throwaway quality, you know, in the 80s and 90s, where if the band wasn't hot, they're like, okay, let's do a crowd pleaser. Here you go, Love Light, you know, and just adios. But this one is definitely one of the best post-Pigpen Love Lights. When I was watching this, the video the other night, I'd been listening to this and I've enjoyed the tape over the years, but Garcia's hands are freaking blur. At one point, this Love Light is just amazing jamming. And also, this is kind of like a flashback to Bigger Shore. They did Turn On Your Love Light into Going Down. The next song is Going Down the Road Feeling Bad. So, you know, that you're in Europe and you're kind of doing what you did 9 years earlier. And you're the infamous, brilliant Europe 72 tour. This Amsterdam show. Freaking unreal, just like a complete outlier of Grateful Dead shows, especially coming at the time it did in 1981. So without further ado, let's check out some of the Turn On Your Love Light. I'm going to jump into it. I skipped the first verse because it was like a little bit of a clumsy beginning, but boy, did they make up for that. Let me stand it. I want you to all sing it now. That, my friends, is insane. A glorious, triumphant return for Turn On Your Love Light. The Milk Wag must have been bouncing off its borings, whatever foundation. Just the joint was jumping for sure, man. What a great, great jam there at the end. And they keep it rolling with a absolutely smoking going down the road, feeling bad. There's something about Europe and going down the road feeling bad. Many of the best versions come from their few tours of Europe. If you go back to the 72 Europe tour, nothing beats that Burke Bickershaw version. The one from, I think, Lille, France, 5/13/72 is hot. Most of those going down the roads are awesome. But definitely Bickershaw is one of the best ever. And this particular tour, there's an outlier version of going down the road feeling bad, which is right up there with any of them, might be the greatest ever. It's from Munich, October 12th, 81. The Grateful Dead rip off four jams in that going down the road feeling bad. So there's something about Europe and these going down the road feeling bad. And this version is no exception. Not quite in the league as the one from Munich, but a tremendous going down the road feeling bad. And on the heels of that Love Light, just awesome, man. And then, as I stated earlier, the first time they've paired, well, they hadn't played Love Light in so long, but pairing Love Light and going down the road feeling bad, I think this show and Bickershaw are the only times they've been paired, although I would have to double-check that. They may have done it earlier, who knows. But an amazing combination. The show of dreams keeps rolling on. And the set starts with playing in the band, and every time I listen to this, I forget that they're going to go back into playing in the band. I'm so far removed from it. But after going down the road feeling bad, they go back for a playing in the band reprise. Pretty cool stuff here. Just that little playing loop is among the all-time great playing loops that, you know, you got two breakout versions and the first Love Light since Pigpen's passing. So just remarkable stuff, and Bob Weir took all the chances, and he reaps all the rewards and benefits, man. Just one of the great Weir shows of all time. 34th birthday celebration, man. You know, Bob Weir's out there in the in his collared shirt, and that's another cool thing that I loved about Weir, man. Just like the going against the grain kind of mentality, which I love. You're in a group of nonconformists. You're wearing tie-dyes, but you're conforming if you're wearing a tie-dye, to be honest. You know, it's So Bob Weir's up there in that collared shirt, and I always so identified with that. He just, he would go against the grain, but he was always a complete member of the tribe. And I always thought that was a cool thing. And I've always kind of like lived my life or my fashion like Weir. To this day, I have a ton of Lacoste shirts in my closet. I don't wear them as much as I used to. I would never wear them to a Grateful Dead show. But also, I usually didn't wear a tie dye. I would wear something, a little different. If I go, I'm the type of person, I go to a Yankee game, I'm not wearing a Yankee shirt. I'm probably wearing a Grateful Dead shirt. And I always appreciated Weir that, he would, especially identified with him back in the day. He was a young, good-looking guy, in shape, I mean, the world revolved around Garcia. He was everybody's favorite, my favorite, greatest musician ever. I wake up every day and I pray to the Garcia God. But Weir was kind of like the guy I kind of identified with back in the 80s. Yeah, he was, this guy was such a like risk taker when he was with the band, so underrated. You think about the estimated ahas and the falsetto singing. He had a mid-range voice, but he invented this whole falsetto thing where he could have fun with estimated profit. And the crowd always responded to it. It was a cool thing. Sometimes these days when I'm listening back to the tapes, I don't love it as much as I did in the moment, but it was great theater. He was the courage of this guy, man. He was the front, like he would take that front man role, even though everybody deferred to Garcia. He was obviously Garcia was the man. There was a vacancy, and Weir filled it up. He moved around the stage. He was like kind of like the. Yeah, he did lead man antics, but he never had an ego about it. There was always something so lovable about him that he could pull that off without offending anybody in the band or in the audience. It was remarkable his the Weir Garcia relationship. Just two different guys who loved each other, and they just hit they worked perfectly, man. Better, as good as McCartney and Lennon, even though it was an equal talent thing, like the McCartney and Lennon, and wasn't as competitive. It was a weird, the Weir Garcia relationship is one of the most miraculous things. And Weir was so good natured about everything, so nobody could ever get mad at him. He was, incredible person. And then that transformation after the Grateful Dead into American musical master, which he very much deserves, man, Bob Weir. So after playing in the band, the show rolls on. We got two more shows for this unbelievable set of electric music. The first slow ballad of the set, Black Peter, man, Jerry digs in, a pretty relaxed version. I think everybody was a little tired after all that excitement and insanity in the ensuing set before. So it's a pretty relaxed Black Peter. Even though I listened to it last night, I was like, it was a sneaky little hot jam at the end from Jerry. Pretty cool. And then the last show of this monumental night, Sugar Magnolia, a little rock out of Sugar Magnolia. There's so many phenomenal versions. We're not going to put this one in the phenomenal version thing, but it's pretty rocking. Brent Midland's doing some great keyboard stuff, and Jerry's playing off it. But I think at this point there was like a little bit of they were a little bit tired all the excitement of this show, and Garcia states as much as at the end. He's like, hey man, it's a bit, we're in the middle of a long tour, and they didn't do an encore. It was like, Sugar Mag was the last song, but a great way to go out. And Sugar Mag is going to be the outro of the episode here. But first, as mentioned earlier, my seven favorite Bob Weir tunes, originals. And I mean, that's the beauty of Bob Weir, that he wrote so much great music. Garcia just jammed over all these songs, loved it. It was, and there was such odd chord sequencing and timing, so unique to Bobby. And just, one of the things that cements him as a legend. Listen to the list of songs I'm going to tell you. Like, obviously, it's going to be seven great songs, but here's a couple of songs that didn't make the top seven, in my opinion. Truckin', Lazy Lightning Supplication, Lost Sailor Saint of Circumstance, Feel Like a Stranger, just to name a few. So, Bob Weir, the American Songbook, Bob Weir is a major player in that, and man, he's going to be missed. But here we go. The seven Grateful Dead Weir originals. Number seven, Estimated Profit. You know, definitely, if there's one song that kind of captures the Bob Weir persona more than anything in a lighthearted way, it's Estimated Profit. And man, what a great, all these songs that I'm going to mention, they're all spectacular jam anthems. And I wrote a book, Deadology Volume 2, where I did the 33 top Grateful Dead jam anthems, and I put the best versions of each with each song. Each one of these Weir tunes is in the top 33. So just the amazing tunes, and for a great song like Estimated to be number seven, it just says how great the music Barlow and Weir, and on a couple occasions Hunter and Weir, put out there for the world to match the genius of the Garcia Hunter writing combination. So we got Estimated Profit number seven, Playing in the Band six. Now, obviously, Playing is a major, major song, led to so many great loops as it did on this night. It led to a great set, unbelievable. Yeah, I think I mentioned it already, but like I love when you're listening to a set that Playing is in the first half, and then all of a sudden they go back to it, and you completely forgot that they started with it, and it's just such a pleasure to hear the Playing reprise. As it was on this Amsterdam, as I listened to it, I was like, oh, yeah, they did play. They did start the set with Playing in the Band. So you get like a double punch from Playing in the Band. Great tune on its own, and the jams and Playing in the 70s, man. Wow. Just wow. That's all you could say about him. One of the all-time great jam anthems, Playing in the Band, number six. And on that note, the other one, number five. Phil Lesh bombs and so many different offerings. The other one changed so much through the years, but such a great jam vehicle, undeniable, great tune, part of the larger Cryptical Envelopments. But the other one was a mainstay through the years. Other one, number five. Number four, Jack Straw from Wichita. And yeah, everybody absolutely loves this song. It was always great as an opener, but even better when it came towards the end of the set. Jack Straw from Wichita, number four. You love it, you know it. Number three, Let It Grow. Once again, part of a bigger suite, the Weather Report suite, but man, just like cool tune, great lyrics from Barlow, and just what they did with that, this was more controlled than Playing in the Band or the other one, but I used to get so psyched for Let It Grow. The big jam had like three segments to it. What they did was so sophisticated, but it was more structured than Playing or the other one. Man, Let It Grow used to get me so excited that, kind of like Straw, man. I lived to catch Let It Grow in the first set, man. What a great tune. Let It Grow, number three. Number two, some of you might say, hey, how did you come to put this one in number two? But it definitely deserves number two, if not number one. It's such a freaking great song. The only problem with it, why I think it might be underrated by some of us, it's the second most played Grateful Dead song of all time behind Me and My Uncle. Of course, I'm talking about Sugar Magnolia, just a song to get a newbie into the Grateful Dead. But when they hit that jam, the Sugar Mag jam, just right, nothing like it. It's one of the most exciting musical statements the Grateful Dead can make. Once again, contained, but just so freaking exciting. Could you imagine if it weren't the second most played song, if it was a Rare song? People would be chanting and demanding that they play it. People would be coming with signs to the show, play Sugar Mag, or I'll never see the Grateful Dead again. It's just that we got to see it so much, and even the Grateful Dead maybe got a little, I don't know if bored's the right word, but they played it so much that it didn't have that special feeling to it. But sensational song, undeniable, whether you're a hardcore Deadhead or somebody turning on FM radio and hearing Sugar Magnolia. But man, some of the best, I think there's more, well, I think it's easy to say there's more great versions of Sugar Mag than any other song because they played it the second most. That 72 to 74 period, Sugar Magnolia. And it also brought out the rock star and Bob. He used to like to prance around during that as Jerry went off. Just always a great way to end the show, as it is here in Amsterdam, Sugar Magnolia, number two. And number one, definitely a personal favorite. There's just something about this song. It's always hit me. I was getting into the Grateful Dead. I heard this song. I'm like, I freaking love this song. And Garcia's jam on it never let me down. And it's, once again, one of these unique, weird tunes from Blues for Allah. The music never stopped. I know a lot of people probably wouldn't agree with that as the best weird tune, but that song never let me down, man. I so helped me get into the Grateful Dead. And, man, I spent so much time listening to different music never stopped. Every time I get a music never stopped, man, I'm like all over it, just like every second of it. There's just something about the jam, the way it's set up. You know, you go into that last jam and you got the building, the kind of noodling around, which became longer and longer after 1977. And then when they turn it over, it's just complete madness, uncontrolled mayhem. But it's in a controlled fashion because music never stopped doesn't go beyond 10 minutes. So, but yeah, man, that just delivered a punch, which always satisfied me and really helped me become a Grateful Dead fan when I first joined. And I've never lost. It's never dropped in my standing. So Music Never Stopped, the number one Bob Weir tune of all time. And I guess that kind of wraps up the Bob Weir tribute. I'm going to be back in a week or two. Deadology podcast is coming back strong. Everything's a Bob Weir, Jerry Garcia, Phil Lesh tribute, man. So it's the tributes keep coming. But yeah, I hope I can't wait to see videos of what happened out there at the memorial today. It's going to be very, very moving. Bob Weir, man, just so underrated until the end. It's so nice to see that he got to absorb all the love, man. 78 years of living, and you know, you're starting at 16, 18 with the Grateful Dead. So that's 60 solid years. You're bringing inspiration and pleasure to millions upon millions of people year after year. You're there for them live. And, you know, the only person who's done anything like that, maybe a little more, is Bob Dylan. You know, unfortunately, Jerry died at a much younger age, but Weir was there for us, giving us everything for 60 years. And, man, he's an American icon. Love Bob Weir. Rest in peace. That's it for the Deadology podcast tonight, or today. Website, tangledupintunes.com. Email, catfishgarcia82@yahoo.com if you want to reach out to me. I'll see you in a week or two. And dig this Sugar Magnolia to close out the evening in Amsterdam. We'll be right back.
sunshine daydream, walk you in the tall tree, going where the wind goes, blooming, blooming like a rainbow. So come on over, sleepy, lie down to me, I'll catch you in the morning sunshine now. Sunshine daydream now. Sunshine daydream. Hey, come on, come on over, daydream. Sunshine daydream. Hey, come on, come on from a sweet dream. Sunshine daydream.
Sorry, but we are beat, and we're playing in the middle of a tour, and we're really pleased that we got to do this. So thank you very much.